615-844-5600.
Or online at WNSR.com. And now, here's the man, the myth, the legend. George Plaster.
Hour number two of the show. In the first hour, Vanderbilt Athletic Director Malcolm Turner was in studio. Jay, if somebody wasn't able to hear that, and by the way, I'm going to replay the part where I ask him about Derek Mason and his future. We'll replay that when Chris Lee comes on at 3:40. But if somebody wants to hear the entire interview, how do they do that?
Yeah, all they got to do is just go to SoundCloud.com and look up WNSR. And if you got the WNSR app, it'll be on there as well. Just go to live shows or archives, and you will find it there as well. I also have it on our Facebook page at WNSR, Nashville Sports Radio, and on our Twitter page at Nash Sports Radio. You can get it there. I'm about to upload it right now.
Okay, excellent. So we've got Watson Brown and Terry McCormick alongside for your ride home. Terry, I'm going to start with you on this, and then I'm going to make Watson the czar of officiating. I know that's something he strived for, and so now it's going to happen. Terry, how serious do you think the problem has become as you watch all these games and every other play there's a flag?
Yeah, I think it's kind of taken away, and I know they're trying to legislate things to make it safer and to, you know, take targeting and things like that out of the equation. But, you know, football by nature is a pretty violent, pretty rough sport, and you can only do that so much once you get past a certain point to the detriment of the product on the field. And so, you know, I think, you know, the league for years buried its head in the sand regarding concussions and those sorts of things and played it off as if it was no big deal. And now some of these things are starting to come home to roost. And truthfully, it's probably been, you know, to the detriment of the product because it has bogged down, you know, play with all these penalties and that sort of thing.
So, Watson, it from what I know, the NFL had their head of officiating meet with a bunch of the lead officials on various crews several weeks ago when it became obvious that the number of penalties had gone up dramatically. I don't pretend to know what got said in that meeting, but if you were that person, what would you have told those officials?
Back off. Back off.
Okay, back off where? Where do you back off?
Off throwing so many flags everywhere. I mean, the holding calls. They'll replay a holding call some now when I watch them. Now I go, come on now. That, I mean, you could call that on somebody across the board on every play. A holding call ought to be a holding call. And you got to reach out and pull a guy. And there are those. And throw them when there are. We are so much into when in doubt, throw the flag. I've always thought officiating should be throw the flag when it's definite. When in doubt, don't throw the flag. But I think we're throwing the flag when in doubt. How about the one last night? That's got to be when in doubt.
Absolutely.
The referee or the
doubt.
Who threw it? I didn't know who threw the flag. Was it the referee who threw the flag? I'm talking about the one that, you know, I think everybody hopefully knows what I'm talking about. I mean, the guy's head kind of goes back as the guy's rushing and he's pushing, but that don't mean throw the flag. You've got to see his hand in his face or neck pushing, not that you see his head go back. I mean, his head went back because that defensive end's so dang strong, he hit him right in that upper chest area and it knocked everything backwards. I mean, that was a great play by that defensive end.
And by the way, the NFL, yeah, and by the way, the NFL was very quick today to come out and say that the officiating crew blew it. The defensive end in question is Trey Flowers. And you've made a really good point, Watson, that if you're not sure, keep the flag in your pocket.
Yes. Pass interference, same thing. If you're not sure, don't throw the flag. It's like what they've done when there's a fumble. They've trained them now. It is a fumble. Let them go through it, pick it up, run with it, whatever they want. Just call it a fumble when in doubt. Because then they're going to be able to replay it. If you say it's not a fumble and it is, then you've blown it that way. Okay, but don't do the flags that way. That's what I'm saying. They're ruining our game to watch it. We all want to see players line up. It's a gladiator sport. That's what it is. It's mano a mano, and we all love to watch that. And we hate to see a striped shirt being the star of the show. That's the thing that I just think ruins. I'm talking about from high school up. I'm not just talking about football. But, boy, in the NFL this year, it's making it really hard for us all to truly enjoy a game.
Oh, absolutely. So let me ask both of you this question. Why has this problem not filtered into the college level to this extent?
Well, I don't know.
That's a good question. I think, you know, it seems like the college officials are, like Watson said, more willing to let people play and are only calling things when it's egregious. The only thing that I think the college officials are a little eager to throw out there is the targeting call. I think, and they've even settled that down a little bit. The first year that rule was in, it seemed like that there were a lot of calls, a lot of flags thrown, a lot of reviews done for targeting, but it does seem like they have slowed that back down and are only throwing the flag when it's the most egregious types of hits. And as far as the NFL, you know, I honestly don't know why they would be throwing all these other flags for things like hands to the face or holding or, you know, pass interference when it's, you know, ticky-tack and it's, you know, both sides going down, running down and fighting for the ball, that sort of thing. To me, I think one of the tipping points was the Titans game in Jacksonville this year where there were so many flags, I think it kind of prompted people to go, hey, this is, you know, unwatchable. You know, even though both these teams are struggling, you're making it worse on them because they can't get out of their own way because of the penalties.
Let me ask you all this. The one that gets the fans the most irritated is the roughing the passer where you see somebody being breathed on.
Well,
yeah, they've gone a little too far, I think, George. The star of the NFL is the quarterback, and they're trying to keep him on the field each week. And I agree 100%. I think I'd like to see the college game be a little more toward the pro game and protecting the college quarterback. But they've gone too far. And again, know what you saw before you throw the flag. Great example. A guy gets tripped, or he's rushing the passer, and a guy pushes him in the back, and he falls over another guy, and he stumbles and falls into the quarterback. Okay, he hit him below around the knee area or falls on his feet or his ankles or his knees or whatever, and they throw the flag. I don't think that should be a flag. If he didn't purposely go do that, that shouldn't be a flag. And they don't see the whole play. They all of a sudden see the quarterback on the ground, and they're getting ticky-tacky with it. And I don't like it. I just think that there's got to be a better way. And I think it is get those guys together, the head of officials, whatever, and say, do not throw the flag if you don't see it 100% as a penalty. And I think that would help a lot of this, in my opinion.
Terry, go ahead.
One of the things that, you know, you're talking about roughing the passer and other hits on the quarterback and things like that, and you know, there was a guy in the aftermath of the Bills-Patriots game a couple of weeks ago when Josh Allen got knocked out with a concussion. You know, there was a 15-yard penalty thrown, but there was a Bills defender, and I think he's got some validity to this. He said if that had been our guy hitting Tom Brady like that, he would have been ejected and suspended the next week. And I do think that in the minds of the officials and all, you know, there are some players who are more quick to get that pass, roughing the passer type call than other quarterbacks just because of the track record and the pelts they have on the wall. And to me, that sort of inconsistency is not good for the game, I don't think.
So
that's a bunch of bull. George, that's a bunch of bull. I mean, I don't care if it's a first-year starter or Tom Brady. A call is a call. I don't like that. The guy's earned a pelt, so I'm leaning toward him, huh? How's that fair in the sport?
Well, you don't think over the years that certain superstars got the benefit of the outside corner on strike three than others?
Yeah, I do. I don't think it's right.
Okay, got you there.
Like, the game should be called the game, not because it's Mickey Mantle at the plate instead of some rookie. An umpire ought to call the game as the way the – so how do you do as an umpire when it's Bob Gibson throwing to Mickey Mantle? I mean, who gets the benefit of that doubt, you know? This is crazy stuff to me. Call the game the way the game ought to be called, and let's forget all of that stuff.
Last thought for both of you. This hit me a couple of nights ago on a play where an NFL referee rightfully said – on a punt that the gunner, the guy going down, gets pushed out of bounds. He cannot be the first person to touch the ball after he comes back into the field of play. And I sat there saying to myself, what the hell has that got to do with the price of tea in China? That's just simply the NFL putting a rule in. You know, we're the NFL and we're important. So that first, I mean, do they have too many rules?
Yeah, I personally think so. I think they've gotten a little too much that way. A lot of the stuff they try to put in recently has been protection rules. Okay, I'm all for behind that. But just let's back off of whatever the rule is, George. Call it when it's time to call it, and if there's any doubt in your mind, don't. I just wish we'd go to that one principle right there.
Terry?
George, yeah, I think, you know, when you're talking about, you know, that situation as far as, you know, how it relates, you know, the simpler the better. You know, and I think a lot of these rules that, you know, they put in of late, you know, yes, they are for safety. Yes, they may be for good intentions, like the pass interference rule that's in the NFL right now. But then I think sometimes they put those in and they don't think through all of the ramifications that it can come from it, good or bad, and then it ends up being a bad rule.
Watson, let me ask this one. What would football be like if we didn't have holding?
Rugby, I guess.
I mean, would it? In other words, if we played an experimental game, there will be no holding. Now, you can't go tripping people. You can't. But we're going to let you hold, and it's just up to the defensive player to deal with it. What would happen?
Are you talking just offensive line, or are you talking about defensive back reaching and grabbing and holding on to receive?
Offensive line. Offensive line.
Offensive line, we would have WrestleMania 3. That's what it would become, because they're just going to be pulling each other to the ground. You have to have holding calls, but you don't have to get ticky-tack with the holding calls, to me. If that guy's hands are on the inside of the guy's shoulder pads, if the offensive lineman's hands are on the inside of the defensive guy's shoulder pads, I think he has every right to hold him. Just reach out and grab him and hold him right there. You've got control of him. When he starts to pull away, you let go. If those hands are outside and he grabs, that ought to be a penalty. If you do it right as an offensive lineman, I don't know that there'd ever be a real holding call. But what happens on the holding a lot, George, is you get beat. And then you want to reach out and grab the guy because your offensive line coach is saying, don't let your quarterback get hit.
Right
in the back. So it's not just – that's what all these NFL guys are being told. We cannot lose this guy. I don't care if you get a penalty.
Right.
If you get beat, reach out and grab him. And so we've gone so far in coaching it to protect the quarterback. If you watch the linemen, that's what they do now. They'll dive on the ground to hold a guy after they've lost him. And that one, the official can't do anything but call.
Terry, leave me with this. You know all this kind of stuff. Is this a competition committee thing that will be a heavy emphasis this year?
I think they'll have to at least look into it, because I think the NFL would like to see cleaner games if possible, because it is to the detriment of the product when you're not when you're calling a holding penalty or a hands to the face or a pass interference, and there's 100 yards in penalties for each side or something like that. It is to the detriment of the game. So I think it's something that will be looked at. It may not be something that will, you know, be a big emphasis in terms of media exposure, but I do think it is something that they need to address.
Houston has an early 1-0 lead. The Astros have scored a run in the top of the first off Luis Severino. Gerrit Cole, once the Astros take to the defense, he will be the starting pitcher, and that is a problem because he has been lights out now for a long time. We'll go to the break. We'll talk some baseball playoffs. When we come back, you're listening to WNSR, Nashville Sports Radio.
Were you scammed into signing a timeshare contract? And did you miss the part that said you have to pay for your great idea? Not only for the rest of your life, but when you're not here anymore, you get to pass this turkey onto your family for them to pay for the rest of their lives. Thanks, Dad. Don't burden your family down the road, and don't be stuck with expensive timeshare payments forever. Get out of your bad idea timeshare contract guaranteed or pay nothing. Call Resort Release today and learn for free how their timeshare exit team can help you legally exit your timeshare contract. They've helped thousands of people, and they're A-plus rated with a BBB. So if you feel scammed, get mad, and get out of your expensive timeshare contract right now, guaranteed. Call NOW.
800-898-0816. 800-898-0816. 800-898-0816. That's 800-898-0816.
I want you to listen really close to a message from the folks at ShieldLawGroup.com and my friend Bill Kalutis. Your credit reports are your financial report card. A good credit report is necessary to get a mortgage, car loan, and credit cards. Even getting rental housing insurance or a job is dependent on your credit report. Here's what blows me away. 40 million consumers have an error on their credit report, and 2 million of those are so serious they're likely being overcharged for mortgages, credit card debts, auto loans, insurance policies, and other financial obligations. If you want to know more about your credit report, I want you to contact Bill Kalutis at ShieldLawGroup.com or call Bill at 615-742-8020. ShieldLawGroup.com and my friend Bill Kalutis.
It may not require a textbook, but it's filled with valuable lessons. It may not take place in a classroom, but it's an ideal environment for learning. It may not involve a diploma, but it can help prepare Tennessee's young people for life. It's high school sports. High school sports can play a critical role in a student's overall education. In fact, studies show that students that participate in high school sports are more likely to enjoy greater levels of achievement in their academic lives. If you think high school sports are only about competition, think again. Better yet, think about attending a high school sporting event in your community. You'll be amazed by what you see. High school sports. A winning part of a complete education. This message presented by the Tennessee Secondary School Athletic Association and the Tennessee Interscholastic Athletic Administrators Association.
Innsworth is a kindergarten through 12th grade coeducational independent school located on two campuses in Nashville, Tennessee. The school incorporates a nurturing community with a challenging program to create a unique, joyful environment where students can develop the intellectual agility, self-confidence, and discipline they need to excel. Visit our website at innsworth.com to learn more.
Blair, what about my medical bills?
They'll all be taken care of through the settlement.
What about me?
You worry about getting better. Do what your doctor tells you. We'll take care of the rest.
What a relief.
Martin Durham Injury Law, 615-242-9000. Get all your NASCAR news every weekday right here on The Final Lap. Hey, it's Kerry Murphy, and Ryan Blaney takes home the win after a wild super speedway race from Talladega. Up next, the last chance for drivers to advance is at Kansas. So grab all the latest NASCAR news, race recaps, driver interviews, stats, and info every single weekday right here.
Hi, this is Ryan Blaney, and you're listening to The Final Lap with Kerry Murphy.
And check us out at facebook.com/TheFinalLap. We'd appreciate it. Every single weekday right here.
Late word out of Philadelphia. The Eagles have waived or released linebacker Zach Brown. Zach Brown was the one who made the comments about Kirk Cousins leading up to their game, where he said, I think every defense is going to want that guy to throw the ball. Well, Cousins had a big game, and Zach Brown is now looking for work, although apparently not for long. Apparently somebody will pick him up pretty quickly. Baseball playoffs continue, even though my Braves do not.
Mine's got one more day.
Yeah, it does kind of look that way.
Tonight.
Rhett Wiseman, former Vanderbilt outfielder, is in the Washington Nationals system, and I wanted to get him on. He'll be on with us from time to time as the playoffs continue. Rhett, how you doing?
I'm good, Plaz. Thanks for having me on today.
Yeah, so tell me where you played this year in their farm system.
Sure. So I was with AA Harrisburg, and, you know, the Nationals do stuff a little bit differently because our AAA is out in Fresno, so we kind of use our AA team as a feeder team to the big league team. So a lot of the guys who played in the big leagues this year, including some of the guys that are on the team right now, have come through Harrisburg, even in this past season that I just played.
So back in late May, virtually all of us buried them. They were something like 12 under 500. The Braves were on the verge of making a big run that would open up a gap. What do you think stopped it from going into a free fall? How did the Nats turn their season around?
Well, you know, back in late May, there were a ton of injuries. The way the season started for them also was kind of rocky in the way that they weren't really healthy to start the season. So I think as a lot of guys got back and they kind of got those guys back into the locker room, you know, don't forget, Plaz, they have a pretty old team. I mean, they have some young guys on there, but they have a lot of veteran guys on that team, including guys that they've signed throughout the season. But, I mean, you get guys on that team like, you know, Gerardo Parra, you know, Anibal Sanchez, Ryan Zimmerman. You have some guys on that team with serious, serious big league time who have played in playoff games, who have been in this situation before, who are just kind of leading those young guys. And I think they really created a good atmosphere in the locker room and on the team and got hot at the right time.
Rhett, they've got a young guy in Juan Soto who I would claim if Ronald Acuna didn't exist and be putting up the kind of gaudy numbers that he put up both in home runs and stolen bases, you would have heard a lot more about Juan Soto. But I'm one of these MLB extra innings package people who watches them daily, and I'm like, whoa, Juan Soto is a problem if you've got to pitch to him. Tell me what you saw of him in spring training, that kind of thing, because the guy's a beast.
Yeah, and, you know, he just turned 20. So he's I actually played with Juan last year in high A. I played with Juan for 9 games in high A. He went to double A for 4 games or so, and then he went right to the big leagues as a 19-year-old. Probably the best hitter I've ever been around in my entire life. I mean, when I played with him, he was there for only a few games and he hit 8 home runs. I mean, he's on another level, but he's on another level in the big leagues too. You know, he's hitting in the top of the order for an NLCS team that's one win away from the World Series. He just turned 20, plays good defense. He's got an unbelievable eye. You know, he had a Rookie of the Year caliber season last year, and he follows it up this year with, you know, I'm not sure exactly what his numbers are, but right around 290 with 35 home runs.
So isn't a big secret of where they've, you know, how have they been so successful in the playoffs? The fact that what they've been able to do is eliminate a lot of the Fernando Rodneys and a lot of the guys that, you know, their bullpen was a disaster. They've gone with the big three and a couple of relievers, and that's really about it.
Well, yeah, you know, you don't really need a full bullpen when your starters are getting you seven no-hit innings, you know, up front, or shutout through six and shutout through seven, which has been incredible here down the line. I mean, watching these guys throw is just insane. You have debatably the best three pitchers in a rotation, debatably with, you know, Houston, who I think is the only one that can match up with them that's still left playing.
Yeah.
But you got Max Scherzer, who's a Cy Young contender every single year. You have Steven Strasburg, whose playoff numbers are some of the best of all time, even though it's a small serving size. But he's also had a Cy Young caliber year. And then as your number three, you have Patrick Corbin, who'd be a number one on 70% of major league staffs, and he's your number three. So you got him going tomorrow night, you know, looking for a win to get to the World Series. You're in great shape. Never mind, Anibal Sanchez goes game one and brings a no-hitter into the eighth. Scherzer does the same. And then Strasburg, you know, last night puts on that performance of 10-plus strikeouts. So when you got the starting pitching to do that, they really haven't had to rely on their bullpen.
For a long time, I have believed that Strasburg was mentally kind of a wuss. That I saw him a couple, two, three times too many pull himself out of games. He certainly didn't help himself when his agent said he wasn't going to pitch in the postseason several years ago. Where has he turned the corner and you no longer see that side of him?
Well, I mean, he's been in the league now for a long time. He's a veteran, and, you know, he's around some really, really talented guys. And I think being around a guy like Max Scherzer all the time, I think a lot of Max Scherzer's competitiveness has really rubbed off on him. But at the same time, you know, he's really had to take over as one of the aces of that staff. You know, there have been some seasons in the past where he hasn't been healthy throughout the entire year. You know, he's been really healthy this whole year. And when that changeup moves like it's been moving this season, he's virtually unhittable. He's got a fastball in the high 90s. He's got one of the best changeups in the game. He's got a fantastic slider. And when you put that together and you got, you know, two other starters around you who are ultra-competitive, also having great years, I think it was just a perfect storm for him where all the talent and the guys around him kind of came together and you actually got what Steven Strasburg can do and have a season like he just had.
Rhett Wiseman, former Vanderbilt outfielder, played on one of their national title teams back in 2014, is with us by phone. Watson, the floor is yours.
Rhett, the pitching has been unbelievable, and of course we all know you get in the playoffs and your pitching's good. You've always got a shot. What's the future look like? What are you seeing through the Nationals with young pitching coming up? Is there going to be even some more help coming that you see?
Sure. You know, I think there's a lot of guys that I've played with recently who have been really, really good. Obviously, you know, they have some guys up in the big leagues, too, on longer contracts. You got Scherzer, you got Corbin, who they just signed to a big deal. I think the biggest part for the Nationals moving forward is going to be figuring out that bullpen. It's kind of been a struggle for us in the past few seasons. But, you know, that whole division, even look at the Braves, it's tough. I mean, those guys struggle too. There are a lot of teams that aren't playing anymore because of the bullpen. And what the bullpen has really become is what it all comes down to. Because a lot of these teams have great starting pitching, right? The National starting pitching is unbelievable. There are some really strong pitchers in the minors, but I think the biggest trick for the Nationals moving forward, you know, as well as a lot of these other teams, what's going to separate them in the playoffs, if you can't get your starters to go seven no-hit innings, right, is going to be that Nationals bullpen.
Yeah. When you're doing bullpen, when you're hunting bullpen guys and they're coming up through the ranks, do they take those guys when they first get them and turn them into bullpen guys? Are there a lot of starters that end up, as they get closer to the majors, they turn them into – how does that work within the system? And I'm not talking about the free agents that everybody jumps on. I'm talking about coming up through the ranks.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I think that's a great question, because I would say that it's about 50-50. I would say that about 50% of the guys come into an organization with talent out of the bullpen. You know, 50% come out of the bullpen, and what happens is they get into a pro atmosphere and their stuff just gets so much better. So you have a reliever out of college or a reliever out of high school, and for the most part college, but you get a reliever out of college, those guys are good, and then all of a sudden they get into pro ball and they develop immensely over the course of their first few seasons. They gain 5-6 miles on their fastball, they develop a plus off-speed pitch, and there's a reliever. Now, I would say the other 50% are guys who are starters, who are in, you know, the low to mid-90s, who have been starting their whole lives, and in order to pitch, you know, into the 5th, 6th, 7th inning of games, they control their stamina. So they don't blow it out in the first inning. They don't blow it out in the second inning. So you have starters who are 90, 92, and then, you know, maybe they're not where they need to be. So the organization says, hey, we're going to move you to the bullpen. Now, instead of pitching 6 or 7, we only want you to go 1 or 2. So you don't have to prolong and really lengthen out your stamina, which allows these guys who throw 90, 92 to now say, hey, I'm only throwing 2 innings. I can blow this thing out. And they get to the pen, and all of a sudden they're 96, 97 because they don't have to save any energy for later innings. And all of a sudden these guys become super bullpen arms. And I've seen both. And, you know, both work. We've used guys. Guys have made it to the big leagues with us in the last 2 years who have been big league college relievers that have just figured it out, or starters that have turned into relievers and then gotten to the big leagues.
Terry?
You know, one of the things about the Washington Nationals, they've had a solid lineup for a number of years, and in fact, they kind of were labeled as an underachiever when it came to the postseason. But now, all of a sudden, they've turned things around, and a lot of people would think they might be overachievers. What do you think has been the key in changing that narrative for this organization?
You know, I think that's a great question. You look at the team last year, probably on paper, the best team in the big leagues, right up there with the Yankees. I mean, for a team like they had last year to not make the playoffs was a huge disappointment. You know, they made some changes in the offseason. Bryce Harper obviously signs with the Phillies. They add some guys here and there. And, you know, the whole year they were okay, not great. But, you know, I think the most important part of any baseball, any postseason, when it comes to this time of the year, is who gets hot. You know, the Nationals, they have all the talent. On paper, they're one of the best teams in the big leagues. But so are the Dodgers, you know. So are some of these other teams that aren't playing anymore. So it's all about who gets hot at the right time. And I think the Nationals have all the tools, but the biggest thing for them right now is they are absolutely on fire. And sometimes that'll get them a little bit farther than having, you know, the best players, which I believe they do have a lot of the best players, but still they're hot. And it's going to be really, really tough to beat them here going down the stretch.
You mentioned Bryce Harper, and obviously his departure left a hole, but they've had several players step up and help fill in that regard. What do you think it was like in terms of, I guess, just transitioning away from the team, the offense especially, being built around Bryce Harper now to being spread among several guys?
Yeah, you know, I think that's a great question. I think that when you have a guy like Anthony Rendon, who's a, you know, an MVP candidate, who carried a lot of that load this year and had an incredible year, and then you have Juan Soto, you have those two guys in the middle of the lineup. Right there, you have over 60 home runs. You have, you know, over 50 doubles. You have so much power in the middle of that lineup. Really, those two guys filled in for Harper. And even in Harper's last year, he really didn't have that strong of a year. So it's been definitely a by committee. You know, you have Adam Eaton at the top of the order. Eaton hit right at about 300 this year, got on base a ton. You had younger guys who were in their first year, like, you know, first full season, like Victor Robles, who had a great year. Trey Turner, obviously middle, top of the lineup guy who can do it all. You know, they had all these guys who were mainstays in that lineup that had good years. Some of them had great years. And what they were really fortunate to have was guys that played really strong role positions who'd come off the bench or, you know, would only play a couple games a week, but had success. And when you put all that together, you get guys that are carrying their weight, and then you have guys having great years. I mean, that's what baseball is all about, and they were able to win games. And then obviously when you have the starting pitching that they had, they were able to just kind of skate by and just barely make the playoffs and then got hot at the right time, and now look what's happening to them. That's it for me, George.
Rhett, let's put you on the spot. Terry, as you may know, is a big Yankees fan. Who wins that series?
Oh, my goodness. You know, do you think the Yankees are going to get there? I don't know. It's tough. I think the Astros are an unbelievable team. But, you know, if it's Yankees-Nats, I think the Nats pull it out if they stay this hot. You know, Houston's up 1-0 right now in the bottom of the first against the Yankees. I think that's...
Yeah, I'm sitting there watching series. It.
You know, Houston is... I think as far as pitching goes, Houston is the only other team that's left in it that can compete with the Nationals pitching. You know, their bullpen's probably a little bit stronger. But, you know, I think the best offense is the Yankees. So I really, really like what this World Series could play out as. I think it's going to be a pretty incredible series.
It would have only been better if the Braves had been there. Rhett, appreciate you taking the time to join us.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Talk to you. Rhett Wiseman plays in the Nats farm system, and has put up some good numbers the last year and a half. It would not shock me if someday soon his name gets in a Major League Baseball box score. We'll go to the break at 3:41. We're having to reschedule Chris Lee for tomorrow, but we're going to let you hear a couple of minutes of Malcolm Turner discussing Derek Mason's future. When we come back, you're listening to the George Plaster Show on WNSR, Nashville Sports Radio. Want to say a hello to my buddy James Warren. He was a classmate of mine, 1977 at BGA. He's also the owner of Sir Speedy of Berry Hill, and James joins us. James, what do you want people to know about your business?
Well, here's the thing. If you look anywhere, you can see signage. A business without signage is like a car with a flat tire. It's not going anywhere fast. Sir Speedy Berry Hill can change that. We are a trusted resource for sign design and production. Whether you need trade show displays, banners, posters, directional signs, window decals, wall graphics, you name it, Sir Speedy Berry Hill's sign capabilities can help your business get noticed.
Okay, tell them where you're located, all the particulars.
So, we're at 2400 Phelps Avenue off of Melrose in lovely Nashville, Tennessee. Our phone number is 615-832-9511. You can look at us at SirSpeedyMusicCity.com. Email us at print@SirSpeedyMusicCity.com. We've got you.
Adopt US Kids presents Multiple Choice Parenting.
Your daughter just had her first breakup. Do you A, put yourself in her shoes?
How could he do this to you? And for Sheila, she has split ends.
B, console her.
Oh, sweetie, this is going to happen a lot. 4, maybe 5 more times before you get married.
C, take charge.
Got to get this all straightened out. Keep a little talking to man, mano a mano.
Hey, Steve. It's now a good time?
No? Okay, no problem. Bye.
Or D, help her find a new boyfriend.
I know a great place to meet boys. The internet. Nice, single boys. Never mind. How about some ice cream?
As a parent, there are no perfect answers. But you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same.
For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
Hey, what you reading?
It's called The Ledger. There's a great column on the Titans.
So it's a sports publication?
No, not just sports. Like, see here, there's a great cover story on why Middle Tennessee's real estate market is so hot. The Ledger has stories written by some of Nashville's best, most experienced journalists. And you can get all the information on the Mid-State's fast-growing restaurant scene. There's profiles of community leaders and data that helps generate leads for my business.
And sports?
Yes, including UT coverage from Knoxville.
Expensive?
Is free expensive?
Free, huh?
Yeah, grab you one at hundreds of locations and tnledger.com. It's The Ledger. Pick one up today.
Five-State Forecast.
Your exclusive Nashville Sports Radio, WNSR SkyCan Forecast. For today, mostly cloudy with a high 77. For tonight, some showers on and off, kind of chilly with a low 52. For Wednesday, a mix of sun and clouds with a high 62. And for Thursday, sunshine with a high 64. Utilizing the resources of the WeatherBug Network on Nashville Sports Radio. I'm WNSR Shannon Holly.
Sports Radio WNSR.
.344 as we welcome all of you back. I know there's some of you who were not able to hear the interview with Vanderbilt Athletic Director Malcolm Turner. He was in our studio from about 2 to 2:25. You can go on SoundCloud and hear all of it. But I know what some of you want, which is, okay, what did he say about Derek Mason? So let's listen. Vanderbilt Athletic Director Malcolm Turner is in studio with us. Malcolm, before you get out of here, I'm going to ask the obvious. Is your intention that Derek Mason be back next year as football coach?
Coach Mason is our football coach. I support Coach Mason. He is the right leader for our team, has been, you know, focused on building this program the right way. But as with any situation in any program, I'm constantly evaluating our programs. And so he's been a great partner already. And like I said, he is the right leader for our program. And I know he's very focused on what we need to fix and how we get this turned around. And so I'm in support of Coach Mason and that staff and importantly, our student athletes. But he's certainly, you know, we're very focused on this week and going 1-0 against Missouri. You know, but we have been having a lot of different conversations, harkening back to what I mentioned earlier. This is a holistic conversation in terms of, you know, what we need with football. And so we're taking a look at a lot of different variables that, you know, I think there are times when some may focus on a shiny object or two as part of this conversation, but really building a plan for success longer term involves a lot of variables. And he and I and others are digging in on that front for sure.
Do you feel they can get much better this year?
That I don't know. I mean, that's ultimately a coach, you know, question. I know he certainly feels that way when you've, you know, listened to his comments. What I'm focused on is, you know, where we can provide the appropriate level of resources that document a commitment that we want to be successful.
Right. But you know where I'm coming from in that, because as I look at them, I'm hard-pressed to believe that they're just going to go out and win the next five in a row and it's all going to be dandy. If it isn't, then what?
As I said, we'll always continue to evaluate all aspects of the program. Coach Mason is our coach, and he's going to coach X's and O's, and I'm going to focus on making sure I provide him, that staff, and our student athletes with the appropriate level of resources to be successful. You know, going back to the earlier conversation, there are areas that, frankly, I think as a department, we can and need to do better for that particular. For that particular program. And so that's what I'm focused on. I think at times it's a bit of a lazy inquiry to just say, well, coach has to do this or coach has to do that. And what I'm saying is, if you really want to be thoughtful about it, we as a department and a university need to ask ourselves, are we providing this program with the resources that they need to be successful? And so for those who just say, you know, again, what's coach have to do? I think that's only a part of the answer. And I think it let yourself off the hook as for me as athletic director, if I don't in turn ask the other question in terms of, well, what are we doing for Coach Mason and that program to be successful?
Well, you know where some of it's coming from because you walked into something that none of us saw coming, which was Ofer in the SEC in basketball. Will the difference be that basketball has more of the resources than football does?
That may be the case, but again, I'm continuing to evaluate. I do not at all want to suggest that I've completed an evaluation as it relates to our football program, but absolutely, that may be the case for sure.
Okay. Sorry about that, Jay. I sort of left you out to dry there.
Oh, no, you're
that
good.
That was sort of the last 3 or 4 minutes of the interview before we let him get out of here. By the way, Houston has taken a 2-0 lead on the Yankees in the second. Josh Reddick, a solo bomb, and it was a big old bomb in the second deck bomb. And with Garrett Cole pitching, who knows, that may be enough. Anyway, you all have heard this for a second go-round. Any new thoughts off hearing it again?
No, I told you I like what he said. I think he is evaluating, and I think that he's dead on. You got to evaluate the whole thing, everything, and I think he'll make the right decision. He won't do it on his own. I can promise you that. I just hope and pray they win some games down the stretch here and ease this thing up a little bit. You can't play any worse than the other day. We all know that. That was just a bad game. But I also made the comment, George, there's nobody in the world thought Vegas could come in here and beat Vanderbilt 34-10. So maybe we turn around and knock off a few SEC teams. It's going to be hard to get to a bowl, that's for sure. But at the same time, there are winnable games if we could just get back and play enthused, and hopefully everybody gets a little better, for God's sakes.
Terry.
Yes, George.
Get ready, because I know your concentration is a little mixed right now. I know, because I've been in that, I've been in that seat. It's not pretty. I'll never forget one day I was doing the show and I just spit it out on the air. I'll tell you what it was. It was the announcement that the Mets had signed Tom Glavin as a free agent. So I'm sitting there, we welcome all of you. The show then was Sports Night. We welcome all of you into sport. Oh, no. And Willie and Darren got such a laugh out of that. Anyway.
Especially Willie, who's a Mets fan.
Yes, he did. Terry, when we come back, Watson has already participated. You will participate in quiz time.
Oh, boy.
Little pop quiz for you. Get ready and stay tuned. You're listening to the George Plaster Show on WNSR, Nashville's sports radio.
Winter's coming.
Winter is coming.
Winter is coming.
Coming this Christmas, a man.
Hey, Bill King here.
His listeners.
Robin the 210.
And Biscuits.
I don't know if we realize how fortunate we are to have Music City, Todd. That is a world-class facility.
Winter is coming.
Commitments 2019. Wednesday, December 18th at Bar Line in the Omni Nashville Hotel. 5th Avenue South, downtown Nashville.
We appreciate you. Appreciate WNSR.
Join the Bill King Show and celebrate Nashville. National Signing Day.
Oh my God, Bill King just read my tweet.
For more info and commitments gear, log on to WNSR.com and get your special commitments rate at the Omni Nashville Hotel. Commitments 2019 from the Omni Nashville Hotel, The Bill King Show, and WNSR, Nashville Sports Radio.
Winter is coming!
Okay, let's say your business does $5,000, $20,000, $100,000 or more in monthly revenue. There are probably times when you need more cash flow to run your business, right? Right. If you're a business owner in this situation, you need to call the Merchant Cash Advance Line right now. We're not a bank and we don't have bank rules. We're a direct lender with the power to approve deals. We look at your business and we decide how much money to lend you, good credit or bad credit. If your business is solid, we can lend you up to $500,000. You can use the money for anything you think is right to run your business. If you need money and you don't want to deal with a bank, call now. Learn how easy it is to get up to $500,000 in as little as 2 to 3 days.
Call now. 800-452-4846.
800-452-4846. 800-452-4846. That's 800-452-4846.
Were you scammed into signing a timeshare contract? And did you miss the part that said you have to pay for your great idea? Not only for the rest of your life, but when you're not here anymore, you get to pass this turkey onto your family for them to pay for the rest of their lives. Thanks, Dad. Don't burden your family down the road, and don't be stuck with expensive timeshare payments forever. Get out of your bad idea timeshare contract guaranteed or pay nothing. Call Resort Release today and learn for free how their timeshare exit team can help you legally exit your timeshare contract. They've helped thousands of people, and they're A-plus rated with a BBB. So if you feel scammed, get mad, and get out of your expensive timeshare contract right now, guaranteed. Call NOW.
800-898-0816. 800-898-0816. 800-898-0816. That's 800-898-0816.
Terry McCormick is sitting on the hot seat at 3:54. Terry, as you know, CBS Sportsline puts out their bottom 25 every week of college football teams. And I would hope and I would pray that you are not cheating and looking. So I want you to, on oath, say that you are not looking or cheating.
I am not looking or cheating. I'm also currently disgusted with Luis Severino, who just missed a ball that I'm pretty sure I could have fielded even with one arm.
Right. You're bitter.
So help me God.
I'm bitter.
Nice line. Okay. Terry, the worst, according to this poll, they've listed the worst 25 teams on the Division I level in college football. I want you to start naming them.
Okay, George. I hate to say it, but I'm going to have to start with Vanderbilt after Saturday's debacle against UNLV.
Number five.
Okay. I'll go with, how about UCLA?
UCLA, we're going to have to go. UCLA is number 15.
Okay.
Carry on. By the way, if you do well, you could get some praise, and if you don't, you'll get ripped.
Oh, well, so it'll be normal if I don't, and
right.
Unusual if I do.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, God. How about New Mexico State?
New Mexico State is number 3.
Excellent. How about their brethren, New Mexico?
The University of New Mexico is number 14.
All right. So far we're doing pretty
well. You're 4-4.
Four for four.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let me think of some more dregs. Rutgers.
Rutgers is number 7.
How is Rutgers not number 1?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. So,
okay,
you've listed 3, 5, and 7 in the top 10 worst.
Okay, good old Texas State.
Texas State, which we once thought was a prison, Texas State is number 16. Congratulations.
Thank you. Texas San Antonio?
Texas San Antonio, UTSA, number 13. Terry, I believe you're 6-6.
Wow. Starting to run out of schools, though, that I can recall off the top
okay.
of my head.
Of the worst 10,
really awful.
1, 2, 4, 6, 8, 9, and 10 are still on the board. Survey
wow.
says...
Let's see.
By the way, we go off at 4.
Oh, yes, I know. Let's see. Gosh.
I mean, who's batting, Terry? who are you watching hit right now?
No, they're in a commercial.
Yes, they are.
Oh, okay.
The
well, you get his
about
attention
to come
a
back
bit
up in the bottom of the second. Let's see. How about Florida Atlantic?
Florida Atlantic.
I mean, Florida International, whichever one Lane Kiffin's not at.
Okay, Florida International is not on the list. Okay, Terry, that was very poor. You've left a lot of meat on the bone. It sounds like you need me to just start naming them.
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay, number one, this week's worst team in college football, according to this poll, is Akron, the Zips, and that's what they've been scoring. Zip. UMass, bad football team. Fourth is UConn. Dreadful. Rice is number six. Rutgers, as Terry mentioned, seventh. And UTEP, Georgia Tech, and South Alabama round out the worst 10. Then Old Dominion, Bowling Green, Texas San Antonio, New Mexico, UCLA. That's 11 through 15. Then it is Texas State, which we thought was a prison, Miami, Ohio, Georgia Southern, MTSU, and Colorado State. That's numbers 16 through 20. And then 21 through 25 are Charlotte, Northern Illinois, Northwestern, Ohio University, and UNLV. Watson, let's do it again tomorrow.
Let's do it, buddy.
Terry,
good day.
Good luck against Garrett Cole. You're going to need it.
Well, we loaded the bases in the first and couldn't score. I don't know. That may be a bad sign.
I think it is. Stay tuned. Johnny Ballpark Franks will keep you updated on the Astros and the Yankees and plenty more to come.